All right, so today we're going deep on a California Supreme Court case.
Okay.
People v. James Lee Brown III.
Sounds good.
And this one came straight from our listener mailbag.
Oh, very cool.
Someone flagged it while they were, studying up on statutory interpretation. And it is honestly like a textbook example of how the courts handle
Right.
those really tricky questions about criminal law,
Yeah.
particularly when it comes to how prison conduct credits get applied.
Oh, for sure, for sure. This is a really important area. And at its heart, this whole case really dives into this fascinating question. California made a temporary change to how prisoners could earn those good behavior credits, right? So the question is, did that more lenient system apply retroactively to the time those prisoners had already served?
Like if it's supposed to be an incentive to shape good behavior in the future, it
Exactly.
doesn't make sense to apply it to the past when people didn't even know it existed. Yeah, they had no idea it was coming, right?
Yeah, that's a really interesting
Good big question, yeah.
question. Yeah, so let's break this down.
Okay.
So, People v. Brown,
Yeah.
what's the core legal issue here?
So the central question is, did that temporary amendment to California Penal Code Section 4019, the one that made it easier to earn conduct credits for good behavior, did that apply to prisoners who had already served time before January 25th, 2010, when the law actually went into effect?
Okay, so before we get too deep into the legal arguments, let's make sure we all understand
Yes, definitely.
Mr. Brown's situation.
All right, so James Lee Brown III, he was convicted for selling methamphetamine. That was a violation of Health and Safety Code Section 11379A. And he was sentenced to 3 years in state prison.
3 years.
Now, the timing here is crucial. He got his sentence, his appeal was in progress, and that's when this whole legislative shift regarding conduct credits happened. So he was already in the system
He was already in the system,
when all this went down.
Exactly.
Okay, so before this amendment, the standard was basically 2 days credit for every 4 days served.
Right, a 2-to-4 ratio.
A 2-to-4 ratio, yeah. But then this change happened, and it made it 2 days credit for every 2 days served.
Exactly. So a 2-to-2 ratio,
Wow, yeah.
that's a huge
A
difference.
huge difference, especially for someone, with a multi-year sentence.
Absolutely.
It could mean they get out significantly earlier.
It could really impact their release date.
Right. And that was basically Mr. Brown's argument.
Precisely. So he argued that this new, more favorable 2-to-2 system should be applied to all the time he had already served, even the time before January 25th, 2010.
And what did the court say about that?
So initially, the trial court disagreed, and then the Court of Appeal actually sided with Mr. Brown. And that's what ultimately brought the case to the California Supreme Court, and they reversed the appellate court's decision.
So they said no.
They said no.
This does not apply
For all
retroactively.
retroactive.
Okay, so before we get into the reasoning there,
Right.
it's kind of interesting to me why the legislature
Yeah.
would even make this temporary change.
Right. Like, why mess with the system?
Yeah, what was going on that they were trying to fix?
Well, the main reason was that they were dealing with some serious overcrowding in the prisons and a huge state budget
I
crisis.
see. So it's like a,
It was a big problem, resource
it's
issue.
exactly. And they figured that if prisoners could earn credits faster, they could potentially get released sooner, which would then free up space in the prisons.
Right, less people.
Less people, yeah.
Less money.
Less money, exactly.
Okay, and it was temporary, right?
Yeah, it was only supposed to last about 8 months.
Okay, so.
From January 25th to September 28th of 2010, they had a very specific window
They have a specific window.
in mind. So the Supreme Court steps in and says, no dice. This is not retroactive.
Not retroactive.
What was their reasoning there?
Well, one of the main things they relied on was this legal principle called the presumption of prospectivity.
Okay, the presumption of prospectivity.
Yeah, it's kind of a mouthful.
What does that mean?
Basically, it means that new laws are generally presumed to apply only to that happen after the law takes effect, unless the legislature specifically says otherwise.
I see.
And in this case, with this amendment to Section 4019, there was nothing that said it should be applied retroactively.
Oh, okay. So they were like
Right, they were silent on that point.
silent.
And Justice Werdegar, who wrote the opinion for the court, even pointed out that the legislature knows how to make a law retroactive when they want to.
Okay, so because they didn't say anything, the court's like, well, we assume they meant for this to only go forward.
Exactly.
Okay, so I guess that makes sense.
Right. It's like the default assumption about how laws work.
But didn't Mr. Brown argue?
Yeah, he did.
Because the state was in a fiscal emergency?
Right.
That must have meant that they wanted this to apply retroactively.
That was his argument.
Because they needed to reduce the prison population, like ASAP.
He was saying they needed to act fast.
Yeah. So what did the court say about that?
Well, the court acknowledged that there was this big fiscal crisis. Yeah. But they didn't buy the argument that that automatically meant the legislature intended for this law to be retroactive.
Okay.
Their reasoning was that the main purpose of increasing these conduct credits was to encourage good behavior in the future.
Right, to give people an incentive.
Exactly, to give people an incentive to behave well.
Going forward.
Going forward, yeah.
Because then they could get out sooner.
Right.
So they're like, if we apply this to the past, it doesn't really motivate anyone.
Right. It's not going to change anything that's already happened.
They're not going to change the past.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they felt that applying the increased credits retroactively wouldn't actually help achieve that goal of reducing overcrowding.
Interesting. So they're really focused.
They're really looking at the purpose of the change, the specific mechanism, and the intended outcome.
Okay. So there's another argument that was made.
Yeah.
Mr. Brown also brought up the Equal Protection Clause.
Right.
He argued that by not applying these more generous credits to people who were already in prison, the state was basically treating them differently, unfairly,
unfairly
than the people who would come into the system after the amendment.
Right.
So how did the court address that?
So this is where that similarly situated concept comes in.
Okay. Similarly situated.
Yeah, it's a really important legal idea.
I mean, it makes sense intuitively.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't just treat everyone the same all the time, right?
Right.
You have to consider the context.
Yeah.
So in this case, the court said that prisoners who were already serving their time before the amendment and those who came in after weren't actually similarly situated in relation to the purpose of this specific law, which was to incentivize good behavior.
Right.
So the court said the people who had already served their time couldn't have changed their behavior based on a rule they didn't even know about.
They couldn't have known.
Right.
They were already...
They're already in the system,
Yeah, so they're saying, okay, it's not really unfair to treat those two groups differently.
Because they're not really comparable.
In this specific context.
In this specific context, right.
Yeah, so the court essentially said the state had a good reason for this difference in treatment.
Right. They applied the rational basis test.
The rational basis test.
Which is like the lowest level of scrutiny.
Okay, so what does that mean?
Basically, the court just has to decide if there's any rational connection between what the law does and a legitimate government interest.
Oh.
So in this case, they said that managing the prison population and incentivizing good behavior, those are legitimate government interests.
Okay.
And they said that applying these credits prospectively was a rational way to do that.
Okay. So they're giving a lot of leeway to the legislature here.
Right. As long as there's a rational connection, they're not going to interfere.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. They're not second guessing the legislature's judgment.
Okay. So you mentioned before that they distinguished this case from In Re Estrada.
Right.
Which is a pretty important case.
Yeah, that's a big one.
About retroactivity.
Yeah.
So for our listener who might be, you know, really digging into these precedents, can you explain why that case didn't control the outcome here?
Yeah. So In Re Estrada established this principle that when the legislature reduces the penalty for a crime, that reduction usually applies retroactively to cases that aren't final yet.
So if they decide a crime isn't as bad as they thought it was before, they reduce the punishment.
Yeah.
And it applies to everyone.
To everyone who's still in the system.
Even people who committed the crime before the law changed.
Right. Yeah. It's like they're saying, well, if we think this is a more just punishment now, we should apply it to everyone.
Okay.
But in Brown, the court said conduct credits aren't really about reducing the punishment.
Oh, okay.
They're about incentivizing good behavior within the prison.
Right. So it's about what happens inside.
Exactly.
Not about changing the original sentence.
Right. It's not about saying the original sentence was too harsh.
Right.
It's about saying we want to encourage people to behave well while they're serving their time.
Okay. So that was a big distinction.
That was a key distinction,
that the court made.
Yeah. And because of that, they said the logic of Estrada doesn't really apply to conduct credits.
Okay, so the court basically made this separation.
Exactly.
Between reducing the penalty for a crime and incentivizing good behavior.
Right.
And they said those are two different things.
Two different things.
And the rules for retroactivity apply differently.
Yeah, they're treated differently.
Okay, so it sounds like there were some practical considerations, too.
Oh, definitely.
That factored into their decision.
Yeah, the court specifically talked about the administrative nightmare that would happen if they had to go back and recalculate everyone's sentences retroactively.
Right, that sounds like a lot of paperwork.
Oh, it would be a huge mess, especially if they had to track down people who had already been released.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it would be a logistical nightmare.
So the court was like, yeah, that's not going to fly.
Yeah, they called it an unacceptable burden.
Makes sense.
So it's interesting, you know.
Yeah. There's this tension between fairness and practicality.
Yeah, like ideally, maybe we would want to apply this to everyone.
Right, in theory.
But realistically, it's just not possible.
Exactly.
Okay, so for our listener out there who's, you know, working hard on their legal studies, what are the key takeaways from People v. Brown?
Well, I think the biggest one is that legislative intent is absolutely crucial.
Okay, legislative intent.
Yeah.
So the court really wants to make sure that the legislature is being clear about what they want.
Right.
So if they want a law to apply retroactively, they need to say so.
They can't just be vague about it.
Explicitly.
Right, they have to spell it out.
Otherwise, the courts are going to assume it's only perspective.
Exactly. It's like the default setting.
The default, so clear language.
Limited language,
is super important.
It's super important.
What else should our listener keep in mind? Another important point is that Brown gives us a great example of how equal protection works.
Okay, equal protection.
Yeah, so remember, it's not about treating everyone exactly the same.
Right, right.
It's about whether the people being treated differently are in similar situations.
Yeah, similarly situated.
Relative to the goal of the law.
Right, and the court basically said that because the whole point of these conduct credits was to incentivize good behavior in the future.
Exactly.
The folks who had already served their time weren't really in the same boat.
Right, they weren't similarly situated.
As the people who were still in prison.
Yeah.
And could still be motivated by these credits.
Exactly.
So that's a really interesting point.
Yeah, it's subtle, but it's really important.
Yeah.
You have to look at the purpose of the law and who it's actually affecting.
Okay. And what was the third big takeaway you mentioned?
The third one is that distinction between incentives for future behavior.
Right.
Like the conduct credits. And laws that reduce punishment.
Which is like Estrada.
Exactly like Estrada.
Okay.
Those are treated differently.
Right. So even though they both kind of seem like they're trying to help people.
Yeah. They both have that element of leniency.
Yeah.
But the legal logic behind them is different.
Okay. So our listeners got to be able to.
Yeah. They have to be able to
spot the difference.
Between those two.
Yeah.
Okay. So beyond the actual legal stuff, what are some broader practical implications of this case?
Well, I think People v. Brown is a great case study for understanding statutory interpretation.
Okay, statutory interpretation. So that's basically...
That's how the courts figure out...
Yeah, how to apply the law.
How to apply the law, yeah.
So what did we learn about that from this case?
Well, we saw how the courts look at the plain language of the statute.
Okay, the actual word?
The actual words,
Okay.
Then they look at what the legislature was trying to achieve.
Yeah, what was their intent?
What was their...
With this law. Right. Oh. And they consider any constitutional issues, like equal protection, and they even think about the practical consequences.
Okay, so like that administrative burden?
Yeah. Like, is it going to be a total mess?
Yeah.
If we apply this a certain way.
Okay. So it's not just about the legal theory.
It's not just theoretical. Yeah. It's also about the real world impact.
Okay. So they're trying to balance all of it.
They're trying to balance everything. Yeah.
So what's the lesson there for someone who's, you know, going to be writing laws someday?
Well, I think the big takeaway is to be really precise.
Okay. Precision.
Yeah. If you want your law to apply retroactively, you have to say so.
Explicitly.
Explicitly.
Can't leave any room for interpretation.
Right. Because if it's ambiguous, the courts are going to go with that presumption of prospectivity.
That default setting,
The default setting.
So just to sum it all up, the main things we learned from People v. Brown are about that presumption against retroactivity.
Right.
How crucial it is for the legislature to be clear about their intentions.
Yeah, super clear.
And how the Equal Protection Clause works.
Especially in the context of conduct credits.
Yeah, especially in this context and that important distinction between incentives and punishments.
Right.
Okay, so I think we've covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah, I think we've done a pretty thorough deep dive.
A deep dive indeed.
Yeah.
So to leave our listener with one last thing to chew on.
Okay.
Imagine if the legislature had actually said,
yeah,
you know, we want this to be retroactive.
Okay.
Because of the budget crisis.
Interesting.
How would that have changed the outcome of this case?
Yeah. Would the court have been more likely to side with Mr. Brown?
Yeah.
Hmm. It's a good question.
And even more broadly.
Yeah.
I mean, in what other areas of the law
right.
do you think that distinction between encouraging future actions
yeah.
and addressing past conduct
mm-hmm.
could really make a difference?
Yeah. How does that line affect other legal issues?
I think these are the kinds of questions that really make you think.
For sure.
About how our legal system works.
Absolutely.
So, you know, whether you're just starting out in your legal studies
right.
or you've been at it for a while.
Yeah.
I think understanding cases like People v. Brown
right.
really helps you see.
It gives you insight, yeah.
Those inner workings.
Exactly.
You know, and the basic principles that guide how laws get interpreted.
Which is so important.
Which is essential.
Yeah, for your legal studies.
Yeah.
And for your future career.
So I hope our listener found this deep dive helpful.
Yeah, I hope so too.
All right, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll catch you next time.
See you next time.